You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Pooler Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. We do appreciate it. Text line is always 251-343-0106. In about 30 minutes, we'll hear from Congressman Gary Palmer of Alabama's 6th Congressional District. Also on the program, April Marie Fogle, News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. Former State Senator Rusty Glover, he's running for State Auditor. And we will wrap it up with our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. That's at the bottom of the hour and at 11 o'clock. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. Tweeted something very interesting, and I thought this, I have to get this guy on. He's with the Reason Foundation. Mark Scribner joins us. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Thank you for making time for us. I certainly appreciate that. And and accepting the invitation. Mark, I saw this come across my timeline, and I'm a big skeptic of Amtrak in general. I lived in Washington, D.C. for 8 years, and I used it. It was a pretty mediocre, at best, service. But down here on the Gulf Coast, they want to restore service. It went away after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. But they want to restore at least a portion of it from Mobile to New Orleans. And the way it's being presented to a lot of folks out here, it's going to create this a boom in tourism, and people are just going to be flocking to Mobile, Alabama, because we have Amtrak service, which I find to be absurd. But anyway, you have uncovered this additional wrinkle, that the cost per passenger, and I guess it would be 5 years out. That there's just no way to make up enough money to make this thing profitable. It is going to be a big suck on public resources. Am I reading that correct?
Yeah, that's I think absolutely right. And this comes, you know, the figure the Amtrak by fiscal year 2027 that it projects to lose $373.40. That's an official Amtrak projection. They're required to do these five-year plans, and this just came out from their latest five-year plan mandated by Congress. So that's the official, you know, and Amtrak has some, unconventional accounting practices and is often very optimistic about ridership. So this may be excessively optimistic. But yeah, I think it's sort of ludicrous to say that this is going to be a key contributor to the region, given that, you know, that is a massive subsidy that we're looking at. And I think the reason why you are going to see very little ridership and very little economic contribution from a restored Gulf Coast Amtrak service is because they are projecting that it will take over 3 hours from Mobile to New Orleans by train. Now, you know, it takes about 2 hours, a little over 2 hours, to drive that right now by unsubsidized bus. And I just looked this up. You take a mega bus, which doesn't receive any government subsidies, you could buy a ticket, one-way ticket there for $30 day of, and that gets you there in 2.5 hours, estimated. So the unsubsidized bus is going to get you there faster than this Amtrak train if they restart service. So I think a better thing that they should be talking about is maybe buy everyone who wants to, you know, who doesn't want to drive a bus ticket, and then save the taxpayers the difference.
Yeah, you know, $373 a loss, and like you said,
for a 3-hour and 20-minute trip.
It's just, I mean, you could charter a plane almost probably for what, you know, I just, People don't realize this.
Resources, you could make that trip pretty quick by flight.
People don't realize this, though. They think, it's like the bullet trains in Europe or something. It's not. You slow down at every crossing. You go through all these small towns. Between Mobile and New Orleans, there is Pascagoula, Biloxi, Gulfport, Bay St. Louis, Slidell, and then you go into New Orleans. But you have to slow down to a very slow speed through these towns. I mean, people, the way it's being presented is we're going to be futuristic and have train service like they do in Europe or wherever, and it's just not that. And I guess for the life of me, I can't figure out why Amtrak is so what is their motivation here? Why are they so laser-focused on trying to get this service restored?
Well, so they've received tens of billions of dollars, at least committed, from the infrastructure law that was passed this last November. So they are they are flush with cash and trying to figure out how to spend it. Now, I think it's important to note is that Amtrak, outside of the Northeast Corridor between Boston and Washington, D.C., that's 700-some miles, they own essentially zero track throughout the rest of the country. So they've got about a 21,000-mile network that is primarily operating over freight railroad-owned track. And the freight railroads are private, unsubsidized, and that's really what's at issue here. And that's why you're seeing the track owner, CSX, really push back against this plan from Amtrak, because Amtrak doesn't want to spend the money to upgrade the track that would be necessary to avoid delays to freight service. And freight service is really valuable. And like I said, it's unsubsidized. So here we have, a government-subsidized train, taxpayer-subsidized train, potentially displacing unsubsidized freight rail traffic onto the subsidized highways. I mean, so we're hitting the taxpayer potentially multiple times just so we could get train hobbyists a ride at, $375 a pop. That, I don't think, is sound public policy, and it's certainly not going to improve the transportation options in the region. And, one thing, an interesting wrinkle, is that you've seen the Alabama congressional delegation completely united in opposition to this, at least as Amtrak is currently proposing it, bipartisan opposition. So, and the reason is because the Port of Mobile has big plans for expanding its freight capacity, and part of those plans is a heavy reliance on rail freight service from CSX. So, if Amtrak restarts this tourist train, it's going to lose a lot of money. Potentially, it is putting at risk these sound economic investments in and around the Port of Mobile that, could actually produce benefits without these massive taxpayer subsidies.
Now, that's the big political fight here. The state and the federal government are spending a bunch of money to dredge up the Port of Mobile, and it's supposed to expand. We've got these bigger container ships coming in here, and with that additional ability, there's going to be need for a more freight capacity, and this is coming at such a bad time. But back to the question about this, and you, I was asking you what's really motivating this, and you say that they're flush with cash. Are there not other places around the country that Amtrak could invest in that would make more sense?
So perhaps, but they, I think they view Gulf Coast as a bellwether case. And they have been, so since Katrina washed out the tracks and they weren't able to restore the Sunset Limited from New Orleans back to Orlando, they have been trying to come up with an arrangement with the freight carriers on this route, the CSX and Norfolk Southern, and that has been ongoing for several years. So they've done, I guess, a lot of the homework that they would need to do to restart service. But I think that's the main difference, is that they're further along on this route than others, and there was historic Amtrak service. And state-supported route service. So That's I think, a big difference. But they really view this case before the U.S. Surface Transportation Board as setting precedent for them all over the country. Because, like I said, Amtrak owns very little track. It primarily operates on freight railroads track. So if it's going to propose dozens of new routes with all this new federal money, it is going to want a strong case to point to, and in that case, it hopes to be the Gulf Coast case that's ongoing right now. So, yeah, this I think is the beginning of some troubling activity that I expect to see some Amtrak. And you know, and I think you know, one thing worth noting is, yeah, Amtrak is flush with cash right now, but if you look at their official forecast, they project to lose $1.1 billion in perpetuity after 2027. So, you know, they're temporarily flush with cash, but pretty soon they'll be right back hitting up the taxpayer for more funds.
What is the future of rail travel in this? Is there any reason to think that it is something that is viable, you know, outside of that Acela corridor? I mean, I see places, California is trying to do some things, but it's every spending bill or every time there's some need for some kind of infrastructure stimulus or whatever, we're talking about high-speed rail, and it never actually happens. I don't know what the future is. I've been hearing that all my life, and we're kind of in the same place we've been for the last 30 years.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, you have some Americans who go to Europe or Asia and they see the train service there as something that they want to bring back home and emulate here. But what they don't realize about those places is that while the U.S. has been, you know, has a wholly private freight railroad system, the best in the world, those countries about 60, 75 years ago made conscious decisions to prioritize passenger service over freight service. And these were generally nationalized, state-owned railways in Europe and Asia. So they made that choice to prioritize passengers over freight. And what they are figuring out now is that that decision turns out to be very bad from a climate policy standpoint. So now you see this desperation, especially in the European Union, trying to subsidize freight rail service that they essentially pushed off the line so that they could put these passenger trains there. So they're, you know, it's causing headaches there that we don't have to deal with. And if you look at what their goals are in terms of the market share for freight by rail in Europe, they are fighting to, by 2030, to get through aggressive subsidies and regulations to get to the unsubsidized, market-driven modal share that we have in the U.S. today. So, you know, United States, by virtue of us being more pro-market when it comes to rail, actually have a better rail, you know, system. But because people don't ride, you know, boxcars or hopper cars or tank cars, they don't experience it in the same way they do with a passenger train in Europe. So I think there's part of it is you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, unless you're stuck at a grade crossing waiting in your car for a train to pass, you don't really experience the freight rail system, even though we have our freight rail system is the most robust, the most extensive in the world.
Well, and as far as like, transportation as passenger rail goes and the vision, and you see the monorail or whatever and speeding along the countryside. I mean, the infrastructure to do something like that, it would take, especially in this day and age when you can barely get like a crosswalk painted on a street without some kind of environmental study. That's just not happening anytime soon, is it?
No, and as you mentioned California, I mean, that has ballooned by the estimated cost has, I think, tripled for that. It's now estimated to be around $100 billion to build that high-speed rail line from L.A. to San Francisco. So, and they have no idea how they're going to pay for that. I think they're hoping some of the infrastructure slush fund goes their way. But even then, that's not, there's not enough money authorized to pay for that. So, yeah, I think, you know, the environmental permitting is definitely a problem. But I think part of it is these really infrastructure-intensive solutions like rail often just don't make sense at the population densities that are common in the United States. It makes much more sense to do air service or highway service. And those are tend to be, you know, if they're subsidized at all, they're subsidized at a much lower rate than rail. And that's just the, you know, it's geography and sort of population dynamics working against passenger rail in the U.S.
Hey, Mark, we're up against a break here. Folks want to find you on social media, or if they want to check out the Reason Foundation or any of that, can you tell them where to look?
Yeah, you can find more of our transportation work at reason.org. We have we cover a lot of issues, planes, trains, automobiles, sometimes drones. So if you're interested in free market transportation policy, take a look at reason.org.
Hey, Mark, thank you for accepting the invitation, and maybe we get you on again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. It was my pleasure.
Mark Scribner of the Reason Foundation. Let's get a break in here. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.